Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This weekend, Living Arts of Tulsa presents its fifth annual Living with Art in the Garden Tour. The tour features six distinctly different Tulsa gardens expressing the personality of the homeowner and the landscape. Some gardens, small scale and densely planted with hide-and-seek artwork. Other gardens boldly incorporate artwork into the landscape. Other gardens still yet are tidy and architecturally serene. In conjunction with Living with Art in the Gardens, Living Arts brings Los Angeles artist Jennifer Vanderpool to create a site-specific installation in conjunction with the garden tour this weekend. Vanderpool is a Los Angeles-based artist whose work includes installation video, performance, and sound elements, as well as outdoor exhibitions as well. She's just returned from a group exhibition organized by the Hungarian Multicultural Center in that country. She's also exhibited solo installations at the Kalmar Kunstmuseum in Kalmar, Sweden, as well as in galleries in California, Ohio, Georgia, and Texas. Again, she'll be creating a site-specific installation for the garden tour this weekend and also be speaking on the idea of site-specific outdoor installations tonight at 7:30 at the Living Arts Space. Jennifer Vanderpool is our guest today. Jennifer Vanderpool, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
This week, you'll be hard at work creating an installation for the Living with Art in the Garden tour scheduled by Living Arts this weekend, and creating a site-specific installation, I assume in a garden somewhere here in town.
Yeah.
When you're working on a site-specific installation, what does the artist have to take into account in relationship to their own work and creating a piece for a specific site? Are you actually looking at the layout of the land in your art, or are you sort of saying, well, this is the best place to show off my art?
Well, with site-specific work, especially doing work outside, it's really important to see the pictures, for me, anyhow, and to think about the scale. And in the garden where I'm doing the installation is on multiple levels, so you can actually see parts of the garden that are on the lower levels when you're standing at the top, but you can't see other parts of the garden on top. So it's important to think about the reception to the piece, how the viewer will see the work and interact with it, because the viewer can walk through it and on it, and it's much different than being in a gallery where there's a no-touch policy. You know,
right. People are going to touch it.
Absolutely. They can walk on it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you have a certain vocabulary for your work. Do you adapt that vocabulary for the space? And when I say vocabulary, there are materials you want to work with, and there are things that you tend to do and you know, that you're constantly adapting over time. But when you have a site-specific area, do you say, I'm going to radically alter my working materials, or am I trying to find a way to use the working materials you use into that space?
I try to really work hard in responding to the space. I mean, I have certain types of materials that I work with, domestic products and home decorating and landscaping, those kinds of things, that I've built up a body of work in the past few years. So inevitably, the piece will develop from that, but I really try to choose specific colors and materials that are going to work with the space. To highlight this and complement the space.
So I know this is probably your first trip here to the site, is it? Is it not?
Well, it is, but I saw pictures. I saw very detailed pictures of it, and I spoke with the, you know, curator at Living Arts, Steve Liggett, and David Weber, who's on the garden committee, and then the family that's donated the space for the exhibition. Uh-huh. So I knew a lot about the space before.
And so how much time are you thinking about, you know, what you're going to put into that using those photographs?
Months. It really takes months, because my work is, there are a lot of smaller elements. There's a lot of cutting out shapes and building hanging fiber pieces for the exhibition that are going to hang off trees, and foam sculptures. And especially working outside, you have to think about how the work's going to deteriorate. You know, you want something that's going to last the length of the exhibition. It will change. There's that ephemeral effect of the work, but something that will, you know, be available for people who can't be there the first day.
And we should mention that your working materials, in a lot of cases, is very perishable.
Yes. Not all.
You work with some food from time to time.
I do.
And you've kind of chosen this path of domestic products.
Yes.
How did you come upon that? Was it early in your career?
It was early in my life. Yeah, my mama raised me to be a domestic goddess. She really did.
You've actually had an installation called Domestic Goddess.
I did. I did a show in Sweden at the Kalmar Kunst Museum a couple of years ago called Domestic Goddess.
Well, what's involved with being domestic goddess?
Oh, well, you know, throwing parties and arranging the table properly and, you know, dressing in such a way. You know, I was a teenager in the 80s, so Laura Ashley was the height of fashion with the hat and the gloves and the whole nine yards. When I was a little girl, you know, preschool age, I would get up in the middle of the night and get everything out of the kitchen. And when my mother tells this story, she always emphasizes she never turned on the stove. She knew she wasn't allowed to turn on the stove. And I would get everything out of the refrigerator and I would build stuff with it. And it would all be on top of the table. And
sort of architectural constructions?
Architectural constructions, poured food, things out of jars. And I would make up little songs and write little stories about it. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I would sit there and wait till everybody else got up.
And show off your artwork.
And show off my artwork.
Right before work.
Yeah. There were a few times where it was not appreciated.
So this has been with you ever since. Well, how did you, you know, when you become an artist, though, you know, did you naturally gravitate towards this? Or was it a moment where, you know, I've been doing this my life. Why don't I just do it for people?
Well, I was always making art. But going through school, I was a history major as an undergrad. And then I went on to grad school in art ed and art history and really had a career as a curator and a writer, but I was still making the work, but I wasn't ever, at that point, formally trained in the visual arts. And it just seemed to be what I was always wanting to do, and I was starting to get into group shows and things, and so I went back to school and studied studio art. But I don't have a traditional training. I have a traditional academic training, not a traditional studio training. And so my first major body of work was based on shopping. And it would video document myself buying, you know, hundreds and hundreds of packages of licorice sticks, you know, and doing very organized, really coming out of minimalism, that repeated geometric unit, because a Twizzler stick, you know, mass-produced, looks the same. And it looks like bark. And I did a show that had a wooden floor, and so I built this piece out of the Twizzler stick and showed the documentation of the video purchasing all the material. And then it just evolved from there, and I started making molds out of fancy bundt cakes and really collecting all of these domestic things. So my mother is very sweet, and she'll see a bundt pan someplace, and now she starts buying me two, one for the kitchen and one for the studio. And I don't really use them in the kitchen. And inevitably, they make their way to the studio. Because the installations have gotten much larger and just mass producing.
I was going to say, there is a fascination with the bundt pan.
Oh, yeah.
This shows up in your art. And actually, if you want to look at some of her art, you can visit her website at jennifervanderpool.com and see examples of the art. But the bundt pan does show up an awful lot. It's interesting to say that the bundt pan stops at the door to the house, right?
Yes.
It stays in the studio.
It does, yeah.
Is there a greater truth to the bundt pan other than it makes a nice, pretty shape?
Well, there's that element of entertaining. I mean, really, this whole interest in cooking was something that I, you know, did through high school. I would prepare these elaborate Sunday meals that would start on Thursday and involve, you know, making things and putting them in the refrigerator and getting them out and doing something else.
Sounds like Martha Stewart enters into
this. It was Martha
this.
Stewart. My mother would just, she'd have to leave because I would use every pan in the kitchen and it would just be such a mess. And I had talked about going to culinary school. I mean, although I don't really have the temperament or actually the real interest in it. So that's some of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And my great-grandmother was a baker, so she taught me how to bake. And I have to say, I'm not very good. I was much better once, but I'm a horrible cook these days. So, you know, salads from Trader Joe's, that's my specialty. I can open the container and put it on a plate. But that's the baking pans. And I actually have my great-grandmother's baking pans, and those don't go to the studio.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it sounds, you know, the piece is very interesting because they are commenting a bit on just our domestic life. Mm-hmm. and you're using foodstuffs as well as landscape materials, mm-hmm. an awful lot of landscape materials. Mm-hmm. One of the earliest pieces, installations that you did was, I guess they're these sort of fruited, sugary orange slices or fruit slices. Mm-hmm. You made into the shape of sort of the everyday hook rug mm-hmm. that you know you see inevitably everywhere. Mm-hmm. And what a great idea, because it was just this textured look, and it looked, you know, just as you photograph it, it looks just like a rug. And it's these orange slices that I've never understood what they're for. You see them in stores all the time. Who buys them? I don't know.
Right. Well, that body of work was exclusively food. Mm-hmm. And I refer to those things as food at products because they're packed full of sugar, but they have no fat in them. You know, and they're these really geometric units that are repeated over and over, but inevitably they're not, you know, quality controls, not quite what one would hope for. And so it took me about 7 hours to make this circular piece that's about 18 feet in diameter. And it's not quite circular. It's really wanted to be, but, you know, just the repetitive nature of it made it much more organic in shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was this at the same time when you're doing the Twizzler floors and the things
yes.
like that. So it's just sort of these sort of food installations.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I guess, well, in all of your site installation, gallery installations, mm-hmm. there's an element of video, mm-hmm. maybe some food, or in some case, the old sand that, you know, mm-hmm. the painted sand that the kids would use and, mm-hmm. and you know, garden rocks.
Uh-huh.
And what is the sort of the comment you're making on this, or is it just interesting shapes with these elements?
Well, I'm interested in commenting on domesticity and domestic practices and what that really means, but I'm also interested in taking the everyday and placing it into an unusual landscape. And dealing with spatiality as well. So it's not just the physical environment, but it's also the psychological environment of taking this domestic practice and making it almost pointless, you know, and mm-hmm. situating it into this imaginary landscape that is really looks like something, but isn't quite something. You know, it also reads like a topographical map. It's taking the exterior and bringing it interior and the interior exterior as well. And it's not condemning any of it. It's more a relishing of all of it. You know, it's really enjoying being around all of it. And I work with these cakes, and I make the molds out of hydrocal plaster, which dries like a porcelain, and beeswax, and resin, but I don't really eat a lot of sweets, you know, so there's this fetish object for me, you know. And it's great the way they light up and they look like jewels, you know, they have a real visceral texture
to
them.
Yeah, the texture of these bunt objects are, I mean, they're really interesting. I seeing pictures of them makes you want to touch them because they look otherworldly in a way. But you still recognize the bunt shapes. The bunt shapes you just can't get away from, can you?
Yeah. Well, and I've started doing more elaborate pieces. I just had a show open last Saturday at my gallery in L.A., Bandini Art, and I did 700 molds for this show, different scales. And I layered the sand. I layered the beeswax with sand and glass. And so when they dry, they look like sedimentation. So they really look like rock forms, mm-hmm. you know. And then the landscape was part of it with sand and rocks and a couple of video pieces and some audio. And it's a multi-level piece, so you can see it on the ceiling and, you know.
Well, and landscapes do play a part of your gallery installations mm-hmm. as well. I'm thinking of an installation that involved common sort of white gardening rock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a very landscape form to it. Mm-hmm. You're also using sound.
Mm-hmm.
So gallery guests would walk on these rocks. Mm-hmm. So you'd have the noise of that. Plus you had this soundtrack of of, you know, the rocks being poured out and, mm-hmm. And walked on as well. Mm-hmm. And so you have this sort of overall sensory heightened sensory experience that's a part of it.
Yeah, I really am interested in the viewer becoming part of the piece, not just looking, but physically experiencing the piece. So the works can be walked on, and in that particular piece, it was called Ring Around the Rosie, and people would come in, and that's, I think, the first exhibition where I used the molds, and they were a mixture of beeswax and white, and the rocks were a marble landscape, and they were also embedded in the molds. They're very heavy. And people moved them, you know, and the white rocks against the white walls made looking at the work very difficult because it would reflect back at the viewer. So it's very sensory.
Mm-hmm. Our guest today is Jennifer Vanderpool. She's an installation artist and the featured artist for Living Arts Living with Art in the Garden Tour, which is scheduled for this Saturday and Sunday. They'll have sites at about six area homes, gardens featuring art in the garden, and she's creating a site-specific installation at one. She'll also be giving a lecture Friday night at the Living Arts Space on site-specific installations, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I've heard, read several critics' work that says, it must be interesting shopping with you.
I guess so.
You know, I think in one of your latest installations, you have these massive shower curtains surrounding mm-hmm. the gallery space. Do you get some raised eyebrows when you buy like 20 shower curtains?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Those are from the Martha Stewart collection at Kmart.
All right.
Yes. And they actually have the self-checkout at the Kmart in Santa Barbara. So, you know, didn't get many raised eyebrows at that. But at the grocery store, because I tried to actually keep this practice of the shopping as being a performative part. You know, there's a real performative element of gathering the materials, but the physical labor of actually creating the work and reacting to the space itself and making the work.
There's often video with mm-hmm. your gallery installations, mm-hmm. and I assume that's of the shopping and the creation of the piece?
Well, some of it's of the shopping, but I also have done videos. There are two single-channel videos edited together, and for example, in one piece, I special ordered 350 pettifors, and you take one bite of each pettifor, you know, take it out of the box, take one bite, and build this mountain. You can hear me crunching through them, and it was awful. It was physically, I think, one of the most difficult videos I've done, and it was split screen.
It sounds great until you think of, okay, after about seven.
Oh, I'll never be able to eat them again. And they're not, those aren't, I don't generally eat those kinds of food, but, mm-hmm. you know, they're pink and they look like little jewels. And, you know, that was an installation with Mexican beach pebbles that were, some of them were frosted with pink frosting, and the whole installation was lit with two videos. That was the one video. And the second video that was edited with that, I was sitting outside in a flower garden pulling petals off of a daisy, you know, does he love me, does he uh-huh. not love me kind of game. And then the second video that was part of that was, again, two single channels, and I was sitting in a corner eating a birthday cake out of the box, and it was split screen with me sitting in my swimsuit on the beach digging this sand hole.
Oh, a hole.
Sand. So it was a repetitive action in both of them, but extreme absurdity in both, you know, really non-productive behavior. Hmm. So there's a dark humor to the videos. You know, there's sort of this Dadaist, why is she doing that absurd, you know, kind of, but also beautiful. They're all very stylized, mm-hmm. pink and flowery and, yeah.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the piece you're creating for the Tulsa Garden. You mentioned that the piece, you have a garden area that's multi-level, mm-hmm. and so you can use some, you know, some height to mm-hmm. it as opposed to just being mm-hmm. in a space. What are you trying to do? Have you actually started, as we talk on Wednesday, have you already started the installation?
Yes and no. started it yesterday and then was told there's a big storm coming through.
So maybe not so good for food items outside.
Well, there's no food outside.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I'm not working with food so much. You know, working at commercial galleries and museums, some of them aren't keen on on that. And you, for a piece that's going to be up for a while outside, food is just out of the question.
Right, right.
Yes, but there are several hanging pieces.
So you have fiber art in this?
Fiber art, mm-hmm. yes. And it's different types of handmade yarn that are knotted together and woven in quotations there. It's all knotted. But there are fake flowers and handmade foam pieces that are industrial foam, caulking sort of foam from Home Depot that have been layered in paint multiple times.
So this would be the caulking foam that you put in the cracks in mm-hmm. your windows, and you squeeze it out, and all of a sudden it fills the space.
Exactly.
Wow, that sounds like very hard material to work with.
Well, you know, you actually just have to get used to it, and you can do drawings with it, really.
Uh-huh.
You know, and just if you're careful how much you use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been painted, and some of them will be suspended in the fiber pieces, and some of them will be on the ground. And there are molds, beeswax molds and resin. And there'll be landscape elements on top of the landscape, and they're cut from the backing of carpet. So they're different colors, and also indoor-outdoor carpet. And what else is in the piece? I guess we're using mold magic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I found at Michael's. And there's, you know, there's just really about going shopping and looking for materials. Oh, this is interesting. How could I use this? And mold magic is between Play-Doh and a clay, and it's malleable for about 24 hours. And I used it in a show in January and thought it was so interesting. It's very lightweight and hand shredded all of it so that it's kind of like a confetti. Mm-hmm. And that will be sprinkled throughout the show. So, yeah.
It's taking shape then,
it's,
I guess.
It's well, it's all ready to go. As soon as
The rain comes through.
Exactly. Then we're ready to install.
All right. Mm. Well, it will be the highlight of the Living with Art in the Garden Tour, sponsored by Living Arts as a fundraiser for this contemporary gallery. It's scheduled for this Saturday and Sunday. You'll also be giving a lecture on Friday night on site-specific installations. Our guest today, Jennifer Vanderpool, an installation artist based in California. But not only have you done quite a bit of work on the West Coast, you've done some as close as Pittsburgh, Kansas. I know some work in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and some work in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And several pieces in Sweden, I think, mm-hmm. and in Hungary
mm-hmm.
as well. Now, I know you're going to be talking about site-specific installation. One of the pieces in Sweden, it was, I guess, set in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And you used this wonderful juxtaposition of those black Mexican pebbles
mm-hmm.
along with white forms that just mixed with the snow incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe talk about an environment that's just very radically different from the one you're used to working in?
Well, I have a colleague at mm-hmm. the university who is actually, I teach at UC Santa Barbara, who's Swedish. And so I was able to sit down and have dinner with her and talk about the environment. So I knew somewhat I was getting into. And going to do an international show, there's a lot of working with the curator. So I was prepared to go and do the installation, except I was working on an installation at the museum in Santa Barbara and had some technical problems with the audio, missed my flight to Sweden, got to Sweden late, which of course is not great because this was an indoor-outdoor piece, and they had just had the worst snowstorm in 100 years. So installing the outside part of it, the work actually froze to the ground as I was installing it and had to chip it off the ground so I could get it in place.
Oh my gosh.
It was quite challenging. What was interesting for me about that show is that the museum in Kalmar, they're building a new museum right now, but at that time, they were in an old hospital that was a birthing hospital, which is where this whole concept of domestic goddess came from. So that was part of that show. So even when I go abroad, I try to learn about the place. I did a lot of reading. I actually studied Swedish in graduate school,
uh-huh.
which my art history professors thought was maybe not the most useful thing. It turned out to be for me. So I had some background before I went.
Uh-huh. Well, it came out great, and it was very interesting. And again, this is where this domestic goddess idea comes from. Are you still working with this that as a not necessarily the that particular idea, the form of your work, but does it still inform all of your work as you continue this idea of you know, the domestic life and putting it into ways in which we're not used to seeing it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, being, I don't really think of myself as an installation artist or site-specific artist. I think of myself as an artist. And I do site-specific and installation work and audio and video and performative work. And the domestic goddess has become my alternate persona, really. Mm-hmm. Do you know, and I just did a piece on labor exchange for the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, and it was a live video. It was a live performance. It was video documented for the exhibition. And there's a tremendous homeless population in Santa Barbara. The community really has a lot of shelters and supports transient population, being a beach community and all. And between the art museum and library, there's a courtyard where they live for the most part. And I actually went and spent a couple of days with them there in my apron and my fake flowers and putting together bouquets. And actually some of the homeless people helped me put together the bouquets and we passed them out. And so it's something that is developing in my work and I think will continue, you know, and that I've not actually done a live performance in any of my exhibitions. I've always been done off-site and playing with the concept of what does site mean. But and that's something that I think will happen, you know, as the work.
On-site live performance.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
And I imagine, I have to ask this question, because anytime I talk with somebody, an artist that uses, in a way, found art, whether it's found in a store or found on the beach or found in a junk store, is everyday shopping an idea? You know, you're going through aisle 7 and you go, wow, that will work. Is it that sort of mentality from day to day, or usually is it just when I have a piece coming up, am I looking for materials?
Well, I really try to be open about, and I'm a visual person, so I'm constantly looking around. And I will buy something if I think it's interesting and, you know, put it in the back shelf of my studio. And when I'm cleaning it out, I'll find it, or I'm starting a new project. And, you know, that's kind of how things develop. I mean, really, I'm using the backing for the carpet, you know, as the main landscape elements that will be on top of the built landscape, the garden here in Tulsa. And I had seen that at Home Depot and had been walking by it for a while and thought, you know, I'm going to remember this. And, you know, this seemed like the great opportunity to use that material.
All right. Well, I hope a lot of people come out to the Living with Art in the Garden show this weekend. Jennifer, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Installation artist Jennifer Vanderpool, the featured artist for Living Arts of Tulsa's Living with Art in the Garden tour, scheduled for this weekend. For more information about the tour, visit their website at livingarts.org. Also, for more information on Vanderpool's artwork, you can visit her website at jennifervanderpool.com. By the way, she'll be giving a slide video talk tonight at the Living Arts Space at 7:30 on the subject of site-specific outdoor installations. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Have a great weekend.